I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Neon Nazgul from the Operation Pug Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am Editor-in-Chief SP, and your other reporters for this special episode number 162 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Do not leave the urine perimeter.
I do not want to know what happens in your bathroom. And Michelle!
So we're crash landing again? Fantastic.
Somebody forgot to give Troy the controls of the ship. This podcast is recorded on Sunday, July 30th, 2017. Live from the Starling Tribune headquarters studios and broadcast worldwide on Geeks.live. Remember, our newspaper is full of spoilers, facts, and speculations about Arrow and the rest of the DC TV movie and comic universe.
Today, we will be discussing Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last couple weeks that could impact future episodes of shows like Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, Black Lightning, and there's probably other stuff I'm forgetting, but you guys get the point.
Krypton! Krypton!
That was willful forgetting, I think.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Michelle, it's time to go ahead and break down the current episode.
Sure thing. This episode is Land of the Lost. It's Season 2, Episode 13. It originally aired Tuesday, March 7, 2017. Director Ralph Hemecker. Credits include 25 Once Upon a Time, 2 Legends, 5 Flash, 1 Vampire Diaries, and even 1 X-File. Writers, Kito Shimizu, Stan 5 Legends, 11 Arrow, 1 Flash, 3 Being Human, and 7 of the Cape. You know, every single time the Cape is in somebody's IMDb, I'm going to bring it up because Chris and I love it so much. Also, Ray, you tarnish it. 6 Legend, 1 Flash, 4 Tomorrow People, and 2 Person of Interest.
Woohoo! Person of Interest. Say, guys, I think I get the feeling that the Cape is your heroes. Like, the heroes to me is like the Cape to you guys. That's what I get the...
No, heroes is better than the Cape.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad I did not watch that. We're going to talk a little ratings here of Land of the Lost here. During the week of 6th March 2017, Supergirl aired on Monday the 6th of March with their episode Exodus, and the live ratings were 2.16. The Live Plus DVR bumped it up to 3.46. That was the 15th episode of the season. On Tuesday, The Flash aired with their episode The Wrath of Savitar to a live rating of 2.52. And Live Plus DVR bumped that way up to 4.23, so definitely the winner of the two shows. On Wednesday, Arrow had no episode, which probably was good for the CW ratings for the week. But on Tuesday following The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow aired with this episode, The Land of the Lost, to a live rating of 1.54, which is probably more than Arrow would have got for the week, and a Live Plus DVR rating of 2.61. So I think they had a pretty good week there over on the CW with the comic book shows.
Not bad.
Yeah, it wasn't terrible.
Right? So what we just start our discussion every week on the episode, we start it with the plot, themes, and characters for the episode. So Chris, what do you think was the overall theme for this episode?
They went back in time.
They always go back in time. Well, not always.
Shh. No, they went back in time to the dinosaur era, often called the Land of the Lost. There was even, what was it, a TV show? A Saturday morning cartoon or something like that wasn't actually a cartoon. But the Land of the Lost being the time of the dinosaurs they went back to. And they might have been slightly lost at the same time, both Rip and the crew.
Chris, I believe you are dating yourself by saying Land of the Lost, Saturday morning cartoon that wasn't a cartoon show. I believe it was a black and white show. I mean, that goes back. That's my era, man. You must have been watching some reruns.
I'm doing some quick Google foo right now. Land of the Lost.
Wasn't that the animated dinosaur movie?
See, I thought there was something like that, too. I don't know.
That had like 5 gazillion sequels, almost like those Ice Age movies.
Yeah, with the little dinosaur that was, what do you call it when you lose your parents? Orphaned?
Will Ferrell did a remake movie in 2009.
Right, but I do believe you're right, Chris. There was a Land of the Lost black and white TV show.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking. I honestly, it just sounds familiar, and I'm not sure why.
All right, so to save Chris from his Land of the Lost analogy that I was actually going to make, so thank you very much for taking that little tip for me. Michelle, what was the link to the episode name?
Well, there's that, and then the other part of the episode takes place in Rip's mind, and you can almost think that his mind, because he needs to find his way back to himself, that that could be another Land of the Lost, Rip being lost and such.
Was indeed. Good call there. I didn't think about that, but yeah, there you go. Land of the Lost. Now, as we start every week, we also talk about the fight scenes and the stunts, which as soon as I saw this first fight scene, I was like, yes, we're back into the fights. Because I remember, this is so good. The Sarah on Sarah fight. Wasn't that good, Michelle?
It was pretty well filmed. I know there was a lot of, you know, hair flipping back and forth to hide who was the stunt person and who was, you know, Katie. And it was really cool. Nice to see all that league training in action and such. And it's interesting that Rip's version of Sarah was equal to the actual Sarah.
Maybe a little more ruthless.
Yeah. She had the white leather outfit on again and just taking it back to old school. It was,
I'll be in my bunk.
Exactly. As it was good. Good to see. Good. Oh, yeah. We need to see more of that. I'm up for that.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll just take more Gideon, please.
We also had Sarah versus the evil Ray and the evil Mick. That was an interesting fight in of itself. Short-lived, but Sarah held her own for a little while. I didn't think she was going to hold her own against Ray. I mean, that's metal that she's punching there.
Yeah, but Ray's not exactly the fighter. And even Rip subconscious knows that Ray's not exactly the fighter. And of course, it's in this fight that her bracelet gets conveniently destroyed.
Which turns out not to be that big of a deal, but yeah, we thought it was going to be a big deal. Like, oh, she's going to get stuck in here forever.
Of course she's not. Next week's preview shows that she's not going to get stuck in his brain.
They're going to merge Rip and Sarah into one entity now. They'll both be what we call the captain.
I wouldn't mind if they merged Sarah and Gideon into one character.
Oh, no. No, Sarah's too good for that.
Sarah's too good for Gideon? Oh, Gideon's pretty badass all on her own.
No, I mean, Sarah is too good of a character to be merged with another.
That's fair. That's fair. She's can stand out on her own. That's okay. I stand corrected. What other kind of fight scenes do we have?
Well, Jax gets to fight himself. It's kind of cool. Fights Firestorm. Wait, somebody forgot their superpowers.
He did indeed, but it wasn't entirely Jax. I mean, it was merged Jax. Firestorm is Stein and Jax, so, but it looks like him. So he fights him, throws him out the airlock. He airlocked her. Him. He Rosalind himself. That was interesting. Of course, he didn't kill himself because he's in a dream and he came right back. So that was good. Then we had another Sarah versus Sarah fight. And then Rip uses his, I don't know what to call it. I want to say repulsor hands. And just takes care of everybody.
Well, you see, he's the one, just like Neo was the one in the Matrix. He's the one in his mind matrix.
Yeah, he uses his, I caught it kind of like the truth beam, like he's seeing the truth and he's realizing who he is. And so he can force push everybody away.
Now, is he a Sith or is he Jedi?
He's just Rip.
Yeah, I don't know if you can really qualify him as either.
So, Bendu?
Maybe?
We'll have to have the discussion later. Bendu is from Rebels and represents not good or not bad. It's all of the Force altogether. Well, we had some time travel, of course, because it's a time travel show, Legends of Tomorrow, in this. And we mostly were in one period, but then we got to quickly go into another period. So, Michelle, you are the time travel expert of Legends of Tomorrow. If not, I am deeming you such for this show. So tell us all about the time travel involved in this episode.
Well, the bulk of this episode happens during the Cretaceous period. Gideon lets everyone know that it's 69,997,983 years ago, and which happens to be when Rey was stranded during Rip's time scatter maneuver. And so here's the thing. They crash because Rip has a special code, and so Gideon has to get rebooted by Jax, and she conveniently says the last, you know, the earliest time period just happens to be where Rey crashed because, as Neil would say, plot, because they need some time-wimey thingamajiggy. But it was kind of fun seeing Rey's home for the 6 months and got to go back to the woods, saves on budget, all that type of stuff. But it was fun.
It was indeed fun. You got to see where Rey went to summer camp basically for 6 months, got to survive. We got to meet Gertrude. We saw that Rey stole an egg that made 70 omelets, although I'm wondering how he actually cooked the omelets.
Well, he made fire.
He's got fire. He made iguana soup, after all.
Yeah. You get a rock. You get a flat rock. All right. That's permanently flat. You use that as your pan in order to make the omelet.
How do you make soup, then?
You get wood. You either hollow that out, or you happen to get another, yes, and that is cooking in prehistoric times with Michelle.
Okay. And then also for time travel, next week is going to be fun. We got to push forward to 1970 NASA with Apollo 13, and we see Thawne there because he was non-existent in this episode, as was the Legion of Doom. So next week, like I said, it's going to be fun. Although I am going to get slightly mad next week. I'm just going to warn you because it's not really going to be close to actual events. But hey, it's science fiction. It's cartoons. It's comics. And because plot. So.
Oh, no. I'm going to put a thing in the show notes that says SP rants here. And Chris and I are just going to sit back.
I'm going to hit the mute button and just do this.
Yep. I already have it in my notes. We expect it.
Once you live through something like that, and not everybody else in the world does, it's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. You learn a little bit about the truth behind things and what you're told in the media. And then years later, the real truth comes out. And once you know how rocket ships work, it's a little bit different thing. Oh, talking about rocket ships, I just have to bring this up. Did you guys get a slight resemblance, maybe teeny little bit of similarity between the Wave Rider crashing into Earth and the Millennium Falcon crashing into the Starkiller base? Did you get any similarities?
I'm more at the Enterprise crashing on Viridian 3.
Mm-hmm.
I went more with, hey, that's a cool use of miniatures.
The Wave Rider crashing through snow and beating up trees just reminded me too much of the Millennium Falcon this last go around. So I will stick with that. All right, Michelle, let's take us through the characters. Why don't you start off?
Well, we have Sarah. Rip is like, hey, I'm the captain. I used to be the captain. You know what? There's a little special code. Because it's really interesting. Sarah's like, well, what's the worst he can do? He's in the brig. And Rip's like, I know spaniel, tricycle, broad. And then Sarah's just like, oh, oops. But what got me with it, I want to jump ahead to Mick, where Mick is like, hey, everybody, remember that I'm Kronos? And then Sarah's like, oh, yeah. Wait, what's the thingy? And it's like cognitive intrusion.
Oh, no. He calls it Coggy something. I remember that.
And Sarah makes a good call and says, you know what? Rip might think it's barbaric, but we have to go inside Rip's head and figure things out. And she makes a good call. Her and Jax go into Rip's head, and then she sends Ray, Nate, and Amaya to go get the time thingamajiggy. So she has a clear plan for the episode, and it pretty much works out. So I think she does a good job as captain this week.
Oh, we're rating the captain right away. All right. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think her score would be, Michelle?
Considering that she makes a plan, she sticks to it, I'm going to give her a solid 9.
Chris?
I was going to go for an 8.
I'll give her a 6 because she didn't realize that he might have a back door into Gideon.
That's because of plot, man. That's why that one happened. We all saw that one coming.
Yeah, we mentioned that last time we talked.
I know, but I can't give her the full Monty. After that, she did a good job. But just the fact that...
She did order Gideon not to listen to Rip.
And she did anyway.
Well, she thought that her order was good enough. She didn't realize that perhaps...
The crew of the Enterprise would not have allowed that to happen.
Wait. They always allowed their ship to crash, so that's why I gave her a 9 instead of a 10, because of that silly plot reason that the writers made her forget that Rip could possibly have a secret code for Gideon.
I respect your decision, but I have to go with 6. I can't give her higher than a 6. I'm sorry. I can't.
Okie dokie.
All right. There we go. 6 and 8 and a 9, so we'll see if she does better next week. She did good afterwards, though. I mean, she took the hit. She thought she was going to be stranded in Rip's mind. After that, it turned out to be good. She fixed her mistake, and she brought Rip back, finally. So what else we got, Michelle?
Oh, my goodness. It's always fun to see Ray giddy. And he's like, hey, look. Look, it's my shelter. This is what I built. And these are the action figures that I made because I got a little lonely during the 6 months that I was here and had no idea how long I would be. Look at me. I found an iguana. And he's just really, when he's ever in his element, seeing Ray just geek out is always kind of sweet.
Chris, what did you think of Ray this week?
He has an infectious enthusiasm for being back in the Cretaceous era and kind of be like, hey, I know all this stuff. Let me show you around. Let me show you the tips and tricks I found. It's kind of fun. You kind of remember Ray's the Boy Scout, and then he literally shows you he's the Boy Scout. As all of a sudden, he's like, here, check out my shelter. Whose home is this? Oh, it's mine. Look at this. Look at all this cool stuff I've got. I've got a nice fire pit here. I've got a nice bed. He did pretty good for himself for 6 months, millions of years ago.
He did indeed. He had to do the uncomfortable thing of warning Nate about Amaya's future. And that was uncomfortable, I think, for both him and Nate. But I'll tip my hat off to Ray for doing that because he is conscious about maintaining the integrity of the time stream, as well as all the people that both Amaya and her daughter and granddaughter had saved over the decades. So Ray was doing what he thought was best. And Nate, I don't think, can stay away from his future.
Nate's also thinking with the wrong part of his anatomy right now, too.
Well, here's the thing, though. We know the maternal lineage from Amaya all the way down to the current Vixen. We've never talked about who the current Vixen's grandfather is. And I'm wondering, could Nate be the baby daddy? Like, could they actually possibly, because they've never mentioned, I mean, yes, you know, Amaya goes back to her village and all that type of stuff. She, you know, never mentions who she brings with her or if she's pregnant when she goes and all that type of stuff. So could they end up together and still maintain the timeline?
That's actually something that I was thinking about. Yes, it could indeed occur. But we're led to believe at this point in time that is not true. We're not talking about immaculate conceptions here. There's obviously some dads and granddads involved in the lineage here. So I think we just have to wait for time to pass and see what the series presents itself for us. But for right now, I think it's safe to say that we don't know if Nate could be in contention for that position or not.
I can understand why he falls for her, because she does have the coolest moment when she becomes, because she mentions before she can like commune with all animals, and she actually channels the essence of a T-Rex.
Which is badass.
And gets to talk to, well, communes with Gertrude, lady to lady.
Woman to woman, yeah. That must have been a heck of a conversation.
Ray's an idiot. Yes, I know, but we have to forgive him that he's an idiot. He really didn't mean any harm. He was starving. Well, really, and he's like, come on, I know, but look at him. He's kind of a leveled dork, right, Gertrude? Yeah, okay. That's what I'm thinking happened.
He covered his home in male dinosaur urine. He's not thinking with all his marvels right now. Oh my gosh.
Oh, it was just a perimeter.
Still, we never know how he got that. He was all ready to tell. Thank goodness.
I don't think we want to know the answer to that.
No, do not. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, I don't care what happens in your bathroom. You keep that to yourself. So we talked a little bit about Mick Rory mentioning that he was Kronos, and we've discovered over the last couple of episodes that he is strong in his willpower, at least in his brain. And all of a sudden they have this cognitive reprogramming that can happen. That's just because sci-fi, right? It just appears.
It's nice buzzy words that fit together for brainwashing.
We used to call it technobabble with Star Trek. It really came about in Star Trek Voyager, but it was existing in Star Trek Next Generation, technobabble, which is basically what happened here. And it's a neat because of plot moment. But it does indicate that Mick knows what he's talking about, and he's become a strong character on his own. He even gives Martin Stein advice of what to do with his partner along the way. So this is, if not cresting, the high point for Mick in this series. And I'm looking forward to what's going to happen to him. And I like the buildup to this point, but I'm not sure I get what happens beyond here. And I've mentioned that the last couple of times, but I'm worried about Mick, and I'm worried about what the writers are doing with his character.
It's making sense because the last few episodes, he's mentioned Snart and a partner and what it really meant for him to have Snart in his life. And, you know, he hasn't forgotten Snart. It's not easy for him to just have a couple beers and move on.
Six pack. Make it a six pack.
Make it a sixer. Mm-hmm. No, he gets to kind of have some wisdom on something. He has more of a unique view than anyone else on that ship, because no one else has really had a long-term teammate or partner on that ship, whereas he has a singular one. Amaya had a whole team, but Mick and Snart, I mean, they were two peas in a pod. You cross your fingers, that's them. They depended on each other all the time, and they'd been friends and partners for years. So what he's trying to tell Professor Stein there kind of makes sense, because Jax needs to be able to function on his own. They're partners. He's not just a kid.
So in my opinion, Mick Rory, if I was rating on a scale of 1 to 10, Dominic Purcell made this a 10 episode for the character. And I really enjoyed his performance across the board. He got to play even evil Mick Rory as well, which was kind of fun. He didn't do much, but
I liked you better when you were killing people.
Definitely had his moments, and the one-liners are always great for him. Martin Stein, on the other hand, it was one of the off episodes for him, where he just gets to play the science general in question and learning about being a teammate and a leader and that sort of thing. And it was fitting that he was the first one to welcome Rip Hunter onto the bridge, but it's just typecasting to throw him in the, oh, we need some sort of scientist for this episode. So it's either going to be Ray or Stein. In this case, Ray's off the ship. So then it falls to Stein. And that was his moment for this episode. So he's had good episodes this year. This was just slight off episode for him.
Well, he's needed for, you know, there's two main stories. There's Ray and them going to get the time thingamajiggy. And then really the heart of this is getting Rip back. So I know, I was disappointed in that too, but again, we have that big chunk of time in Rip's head, and it's fitting that his mind is the ship.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Well, it's his life, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about him for a second there, especially his time with Gideon, and he kisses Gideon. The one thing that comes into my mind, I know it's been a year, but just last year, he was all about his family. was all about his wife and his son, trying to get them back. And then all of a sudden, he's kissing the ship's AI in his head. So do you guys buy that, the trip that he's taken in the past year, or am I the only one having problems with this?
So Rip is lost. I mean, let's be honest. His wife and son die. He becomes slightly unhinged on that. His mind gets wiped and everything he knows twists in on itself. The only constant in his life throughout all of this has been the Wave Runner, has been Gideon. So I think the whole kiss thing may be a little overdone, but literally, that's all he has in his life that's been the same. That's the only thing he's really had he could depend on through all of this. So there's kind of a weird connection between Rip and Gideon.
I did get a certain the Doctor's Wife vibe from this episode. And in the Doctor's Wife episode of Doctor Who, that's what I'm talking about, the Doctor doesn't actually kiss the TARDIS, but you want that moment to happen. This actually happens here. So a little tip to the fans, I guess, right there. And I could see that Rip's lost and that Gideon has been the only stabilizing factor. But after it was over, he said he enjoyed it to her. And when they were talking in the hallway, which is kind of weird to be just talking openly like that in a hallway. But hey, I'm not a member of the crew and I'm not on the Wave Rider, so I don't know Wave Runner. So I don't know if that occurs all the time or not. But it just seemed off to me. I'll just leave it at that. I recognize what you're talking about, Chris, but it seemed off.
You're not the only one. It's like, got it like in his head because in there she said, you know, you have to let me go in order. Because once he realizes the truth, his mind ship collapses and he actually has to leave on his own. And his lost mind kissing her, I'm like going, okay. You know, he's at that low point. I can see it. And then what got me was that afterwards, she remembers it. And I'm like, okay, how does, okay. Like, I guess she entered because the time cognitive thingy, you know, she was running it. So I guess technically she could have been in there too. But the fact that she remembers and she said that she liked it, and he's like, I liked it too. That was the creepy moment for me. That's the moment that I didn't really.
No, don't get me wrong. I think there's a creep factor to it as well. It's just, he's lost. He has no idea what's going on in his life. And in his dream world, he lived a dream, basically. The personification of the one dependable thing to him. So, I mean, let's be honest. When he gets his mind put back together, you can tell the way Arthur Darvill plays it that Rip is still lost, still trying to come to terms with everything that's happened to him, everything he's been forced to do, and the fact that just because he's starting to remember everything doesn't necessarily mean it all makes sense to him. He's completely lost.
Yeah, it's going to be like the episode after the Best of Both Worlds for Picard. That's where his headspace is right now.
Or after The Inner Light, when everything doesn't make sense because you've lived this whole other experience.
I could see that. And just a little note here, probably more than a little note. Amy Pemberton, who plays Gideon, actually gets to appear in person here. And I can't remember the news stories or not. I think she is going to appear in person again in season 3. Phenomenal actress, phenomenal voice actor. And it was really good to see her on the ship.
And it makes sense that Sarah thought she was hot, but, you know, it's not like Sarah wanted to get with it.
The thought might cross her minds. I don't know. We'll talk about Sarah's love life later on in the show in season 3. But it was good. My point was, it was good seeing Gideon on the ship. I mean, actual, a physical person, individual human.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
And Amy Pemberton is the one who voices, and that is actually her. You saw her on the ship there. So that is the bulk of what happened in this episode. Michelle, you got any overriding thoughts?
I'm still going to voice, it's not that I don't like Amaya and Nate together. I don't really like how it's progressed. It's just, to me, it's out of the blue. They still really don't have that much chemistry. They're working on it, but it's like, okay.
We've talked about it before that you have both Nate and Ray on the ship. And between the two of them, you only really need one. And you have two of them. So oftentimes you have one that takes the spotlight and the other one takes the second chair, or you're trying to interact the two of them together in a buddy-buddy relationship. but it's really awkward having them both on the ship. And this just might be a way to get Nate off the ship and then to keep Ray on the ship. I don't know. I'm just speculating at this point. We don't know what's going to happen in season three yet or not. Chris, do you have any overriding thoughts for the episode?
This one was fun. I like seeing Rip finally come back into the fold, and I'm really curious to see how he fits into things going forward from this point. Because remember, he used to be the captain. He's not the captain anymore. Might be the captain. They never really solved all that. But remember, from his standpoint, he's used to leading the show around there, and I don't think that's going to be the case going forward.
I thought about that captain or not captain thing, and when Martin Stein introduces him back on the bridge, he reverts from captain to mister. And I think at that moment, everybody realized he is no longer captain of the Wave Runner. It is Sarah.
Well, and he probably shouldn't be as screwed up as his head is right now.
Yep.
Yeah, he is a bit of a scrambled egg mess. And he did try to kill them, and he did kill Sarah. So, yeah, a demotion is in order.
Yeah, Martin was the one who demoted him to mister. That was interesting right there. All right, Michelle, what do we got on tap for next week?
Sure. Next episode is Moonshot, which is season 2, episode 14. It originally aired March 14th, 2017. The Legends learn where the last fragment of the Spear of Destiny is hidden when they track Commander Steele to NASA headquarters in 1970. Director Kevin Mock, writer Grain Godfrey.
I remember Grain is going to be a good episode indeed. So with that, we're going to move on to the newsroom. Direct from the Starling Tribune main news desk, we have some great Arrow news because we're predominantly an Arrow show. So we're just going to start off with some Arrow news. Michelle, what do you got to start us off?
Sure. Emmy Award winner Michael Emerson has joined the cast of Arrow for the series' sixth season, as revealed at a panel for the DC Comics-based Arrow in San Diego. The Lost alum will board the series in a recurring capacity. He will play a member of a villainous cabal. Also, it was confirmed that Anatoly will return next season, ooh, and that is awesome.
It is indeed Anatoly. Come on, Chris, give it up for Anatoly.
I'm excited.
All right. What else are you excited about, Chris?
So I'm not as much excited, but I wanted to bring this point up. As there's been a lot of debate as to whether Olicity is good, bad for the show. They started teasing again in season 5. Everyone was wondering, so what's going on with that? Well, executive producer Mark Guggenheim said during an interview at Comic-Con with comicbook.com, I'm going to give a very unsatisfying answer to the Olicity fans, which is that we sort of set Oliver and Felicity on a certain trajectory starting with 520, and you saw a little bit of it in 523. We're continuing it. I will say that the events of the finale did throw a little bit of a wrench into their slow rekindling of their relationship. So maybe it's happening, maybe it's not. There's a lot of people that are starting to have a theory that maybe Felicity didn't make it off the island, though, which could be part of the reason he's being a bit more evasive here. Because if you follow people on social media, you haven't seen much from Emily Bett Rickards from the set of Arrow being posted to social media. So is she dead? And is that why he kind of gave the evasive half answer? Or is it just wait and see?
This does follow the show's history of offing people as they've rekindled their relationships or come to terms with people or are in a happy place. So yeah, I could definitely say we've been talking about it for months, but the social media kind of confirms it more than Mark Guggenheim's comments. Cause Mark knows what to say and what not to say. It's his show. He knows what the direction of it that he wants to go.
Or the producers have said, here's X amount of money, and then here is the penalty if you give anything away.
Yeah, it could also be just an elaborate play as they want people to start talking about it. So it's like, hey, don't post anything on set on social media for a little bit. Let's see what happens. Because you got to remember, a lot of shows nowadays, a lot of casts are very social media conscious, and will sprinkle some hints here or misdirect from time to time. It could happen.
I don't know anything about misdirecting audiences. For those of you that don't get the joke, there was the fake firing of Steven on Better Podcasting just a few months ago. So Michelle, continuing on the great scoop of things about, what do you got for us from Wendy Miracle?
So Wendy Miracle teased some information about the new villain for next season. So she said, as usual, every season we want to try to up the stakes and do something different. This will be something we've never seen before. The villain will be hopefully as dynamic, as interesting as the ones we've had in the past. These people or this person won't just be somebody that's a thorn in Oliver's side, but it'll affect the whole team personally and very directly. And then it was asked, could Caden, James, and Helix be the culprits? And she said, you never know. They are still in the wind. We don't like to leave those threads dangling.
At least not yet. They'll eventually open up a little bit. They'll tease until we go. But this is the end of July. The season starts in, is it beginning of October this year? I think it is, right? First weekend of October. So there's a few months between here and there. And we'll just see what unveils between there and now. And stay tuned to future Starling Tribunes as the villain of Arrow becomes. Remember, we still have Vigilante out there too. So we'll see what goes on with that. So Chris, one of the great things, well, going back to season one that you and I have both loved is the flashback. So what do we got in the news for flashbacks in season six?
Well, so Mark Guggenheim talked about at Comic-Con that yes, flashbacks will still continue, but a little bit differently. He said, you're still going to see flashbacks. It won't be every episode and it won't be serialized. They'll be character specific. And I'll give you one example. As you saw in the trailer, Manu Bennett is back for the season premiere, and he's coming back for a special two-part episode in the first half of the season, where we're really going to be focusing hard on his character, post everything he's experienced on the show, and we intend to do a Slade Wilson flashback story. So they're going to shift the flashbacks away from being Oliver-centric and maybe to some of the supporting characters and characters we really like, such as Slade Wilson, because like it's been said on here before, I'm a big fan of Manu Bennett's Slade Wilson. So I would love to see what this flashback entails. Hopefully something to do with his son or something like that.
I would like to see the flashback within a flashback sort of thing. Like we've already seen the flashback or a flashback within the show. Hey, we talked about this before, like season one of Arrow. We can do a flashback around that time and intertwine it with scenes that are there, kind of like Back to the Future 2 sort of thing. I think that would work out great, right?
There you go.
Right, moving on into general DC TV news. Michelle, you have, as I've teased before, you have some news about Sarah's love interest in season three of Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes, love is in the air for Wave Rider Captain Sarah Lance. When the character returns in Legends of Tomorrow season three, she will find herself embroiled in a new romance. On Twitter, executive producer Mark Guggenheim revealed that this romance will be a new character. Guggenheim and fellow executive producer Phil Klemmer revealed that Sarah will get a new love interest at Comic-Con. That's when it was revealed. They said, it's definitely time for Sarah to settle down or at least have a relationship that's more than a roll in the hay. It's hard when you're traveling through time, Klemmer announced. It's definitely been a priority of ours to reestablish Sarah's bisexuality in season three. Guggenheim added, it's a big, important thing for us this year.
Sarah's love interest is big, important to everybody. I don't care what year it is. There you go. Well, thanks for bringing that to us. Chris? Will there or will there not be House Slytherin on the Flash set this year?
Well, it's looking like not. Again, being in a relationship with Caitlin Snow or being interested in having a relationship with her appears to be the kiss of death for characters. As of right now, Tom Felton is not returning as a series regular for the Flash. Remember, at the close of season 3, Julian was still a member of Team Flash. But with the show jumping forward 6 months, it looks like he might have left the show. He was missing from all the new season 4 footage shown in the trailers at Comic-Con, and he did not attend. As of yet, he has not been booked to return to the show, but hey, just like all the other actors in the Berlantiverse, he could show up if his schedule permits, so we might get him back, we might not. I just like to say, hey, further proof that you should not fall in love with Caitlin Snow because you'll die.
He's not dead.
He's dead to me now.
He could get in a relationship with the Huntress and he could be back. Could you imagine the Huntress and Felton together? That would be awesome.
No, I couldn't, no. Actually.
And you know what? One of the things I would like to see with our next season of The Flash, Caitlin Snow, just be Caitlin Snow and not have to worry about boyfriends or anything like that. Just let her be Caitlin Snow.
Have you read any of the Justice League America comics or read any of the contents in the Justice League America?
No.
Caitlin Snow is in it, and it is about her cold sickness, basically, and about her trying to beat that. And I think that's where we're at with the character within Flash now, whether or not it's supposed to translate over to the comics or not. So when you're in that position where you're trying to do some soul searching and figure out what is either right or wrong with you. It's not the right time to be in a relationship, in my opinion. And if the show goes forward without a relationship for her, I think that is a good thing. And as you pointed out, you don't have to be in a relationship to be a strong character if you're a female on any show, and definitely not Caitlin Snow. So moving on into more casting with The Flash, Michelle, you have some insights into that, don't you?
Yeah, so a lot of casting for season four has happened. Neil Sandilands from The 100 is set to take on the role of Clifford DeVoe, the Thinker, a metahuman with a mega mind who embarks on a season-long battle with The Flash that pits the fastest man alive against the fastest mind alive. Danny Trejo from Machete. Danny Trejo is Breacher, a feared bounty hunter from Earth 19 and the imposing father of interdimensional bounty hunter Gypsy. His mission is to prevent any interdimensional traveler from threatening the life on his planet, especially his daughters. Kim Engelbrecht is the Mechanic, a highly intelligent engineer who designs devices for DeVoe. As DeVoe's right hand, she's the truest of true believers who will stop at nothing to help him implement his plan to fix humanity.
Sounds like a diabolical set of characters right there. Might be good, might be good. Yeah, I think it's good for The Flash not to have a speedster as a main villain for the year. I think everybody's over that.
Yes, please.
And talking about The Flash again, what do you think of The Flash's suit, Chris?
So it's been teased off and on that Grant Gustin's gone on Instagram and Twitter and be like, hey, all these other guys get these cool new suit upgrades, specifically when Oliver got his sleeveless suit in season three, things like that. We've always been wondering, when's Barry going to get his upgrade? Well, set photos captured by YVRshoots.com show Grant Gustin on set July 28th wearing what appears to be a new Flash suit. This comes after he shared a part of a photo of the suit on Instagram and spoke again about his desire for a new costume during an interview at San Diego Comic-Con. Appears to be almost identical to the suit worn by the 2024 version of Barry Allen, seen briefly in the Once and Future Flash. It's time for an upgrade, and the set photos made it look pretty cool, and I'm wondering if this is going to be a permanent upgrade or if there is a reason why he has adopted the uniform of a future Flash.
That is... I don't know what to think about this next season. We've made bets before on how far Flashpoint is going to make it, and I talked about making bets on how far Flash not being on the show, Barry Allen not being on the show, is going to make it. What do you think, Chris? You think it's going to be a couple episodes? You think it's going to be half a year? What do you think?
Well, if he's already on set on July 28th and it's actually him and not some kind of hologram they're doing to make it look like Barry's around, I think we're talking about maybe a 2-episode gap or an episode and a half, basically. And it's the back half of a second episode where he appears.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
I'm going to say they're going to repeat from last year. Flashpoint was one episode. So I'm going to go one episode.
Not only is it one episode, but it's going to be a movie too.
Ugh, don't get me started on that right now.
You know what, guys? If you are, dear audience, if you are wanting to see a good adaptation of the Flashpoint storyline, there is an animated version. It is excellent. Go Google that. Go find it. Go watch it.
Good enough. Hey, it's not only The Flash and Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow, but we also have Supergirl coming up for their season three on the CW. So, Michelle, what kind of teasers do you have for the season three coming up?
A lot. The CW has confirmed that Callista Flockhart will return for Supergirl season three. Yay! And it sounds like she'll be popping in a lot more frequently this time around as she's secured recurring status. Double yay! She'll first appear in the season premiere on October 9th. Additionally, Adrian Pazdar, Carl Lumley, Yael Groblas, and Emma Tremblay have all joined the cast. Pazdar will play Morgan Edge, a ruthless real estate developer who will find himself at odds with Lena Luthor. Lumley will play John's father, Miran Jones, a pacifist religious leader on Mars. Groblas will play Psy, a psychic villain who uses people's minds against them. Tremblay will play Ruby, a smart kid whose fascination with Supergirl lands her in serious trouble. The official season three trailer gives us our first look at Odette Annabelle and Blake as Rain and Erica Durant as Olora Zor-El. That's a lot.
It is indeed. Looking forward to this next season. Do you think it's going to be better than last year? I have the sense that they're, now that they got their feet underneath them in CW versus CBS, that this is going to be the best season of Supergirl ever.
Oh, yeah. Last year, they had to undergo not only a network switch, but a location, a film and location switch. And, you know, they lost Calista Flockhart. And I think they did pretty well for I actually liked season two. They can only come back stronger.
Well, we'll see just in a couple of months. Chris, you have some good news and bad news with Legends of Tomorrow.
So there's all sorts of casting news coming up for Legends Tomorrow. So let's start with some of the good news. The CW announced that Wentworth Miller and Neil McDonough will reprise their roles as Captain Cold and Damian Dark, respectively, in the upcoming third season. So Miller is actually returning in a recurring capacity, but he's not going to be exactly the same Leonard Snart we came to know and love in earlier seasons. Instead, he'll be playing a brand new version of the character, which should lead to some interesting interactions between him and Mick specifically. During the Legends panel at Comic-Con, executive producer Phil Klemmer teased, Mick Rory needs his pal, but unfortunately, he's not going to be getting the version of his pal that he remembers. Meanwhile, McDonough is going to be up to series regular, and will also come with his own more dangerous changes. We'll be meeting a new version of Damian Dark, a little less silly, a little more formidable. Arthur Darvill will also be back as Rip Hunter, but now in a recurring role, and it sounds like he'll be coming into conflict with his former teammates. Last season, the Legends were the only game in town, according to Klemmer. Now they're competing with the best and brightest. Rip Hunter has reconstituted what the Time Masters were. So the existential question of the Legends is, where do we fit into this universe? Other new additions include a villain in the form of Kuasa, Vixen's granddaughter. Ta-La-Ashi will also join the Wave Rider crew as Zari Adriana Tomas, a Muslim-American woman from the year 2030. So all sorts of casting changes for Legends Tomorrow.
I don't know how I feel about this, because I love Wentworth Miller, and so to me, he can do no wrong. And so for me, okay, that's fine. But Damian Dark was on Arrow, and then he was on Legends, and now he's coming back again. Neil McDonough, I love you, but to have Cold and Dark back yet again, I think it's just a little bit too much. And if I had to pick one, I will always pick Wentworth Miller.
Indeed. I've always thought the Arrow appearance was enough that we needed of Neil McDonough in the Flareverse. And this past year, with Legends of Tomorrow, as we're currently covering on Starling Tribune, is stretching the Neil McDonough character. I mean, he's had some great moments back and forth with his Legends of Doom compadres, but I'm wanting to move forward with Arthur Darvill coming back as reconstituting the Time Masters. I always thought that's what he would eventually do, so this is no big deal. And he is not part of the Wave Runner team anymore, so I could see him becoming in conflict with the team, with Sarah. But at least he's going to be looking at doing the right thing. Maybe a slightly different way, but doing the right thing. And the conflict will become between how they do it. The issue I have is Neil McDonough. So you took the words right out of my mouth. The Neil McDonough thing. I love Neil McDonough. I always have, going back to Band of Brothers. But I think his time is done on the Flareverse. And we'll see what his character does this year. Maybe he'll surprise us. Who knows?
Yeah, I just want to wait and see what he does. I'm a big fan of him. So, hey, let's see what they do with the character.
Well said, Chris. So finally, Michelle, you have some interesting speculation on Supergirl.
Yeah, so Erica Durance is coming back as Allura, and this is a recast. In season one, Allura is Supergirl's mother, you know, biological Kryptonian mother. And so it's like she was there in like a hologram form, and then there was the aunt and all that type of stuff. So now it's like, is Allura actually still alive? So EW asked new showrunners Jessica Queller and Robert Rovner about this, and they said, shrouded in mystery, those questions, Queller said. Rovner added, we wanted to keep Allura's presence on the show because it really connects Kara to Krypton and her roots and what it meant to see her family and her planet destroyed. It's an emotional grounding that's always important. However, there's a good chance Mon-El ended up in the Phantom Zone, you know, at the end of last season. And it's the same Kryptonian prison that Allura had a hand in sending criminals to. So what if she escaped the destruction of Krypton and ended up there herself? The executive producer sort of dodged this, and they said where Mon-El is and how he comes back is the central mystery of our season. Queller said, but the theme of this season is what does it mean to be human? Kara is going to be especially grappling with that, and all of the characters are. The loss of her family and Krypton impacts that a lot. The mother-daughter relationship is something we still want to explore in whatever fashion. So, this means Mon-El. I knew Mon-El was coming back, but that sort of, like, seals the deal. We're not rid of Mon-El. I know some people loved him, some people didn't.
He is all right.
So, what do you guys think? Do you think the Phantom Zone thing, do you think they could use that as a way to bring her back, or...
It's typically what they've done in the Superman times. I mean, the Phantom Zone is there. We'll see what happens. It's not like Superman's parents, they never come back. At least not to my knowledge. So it might have in the comics at some point in time, but I'm not a Superman comic expert. I haven't really been grounded in the Supergirl side of things either in the comics, but this is entirely possible. She could end up in the Phantom Zone in the waning days of the planet, just because some people that escaped from prison put her in there. So yeah, it's possible.
Be interesting. I'm debating about, do I want her to be an actual living entity, or because if she's in the Phantom Zone, she would not have aged. So it would be interesting to see her kind of near Kara's age. So Kara's an adult, and then there would be Allura, and then it would be an interesting dynamic if she was actually alive and came from the Phantom Zone. That would be very interesting.
They just did the whole long absent parent returns last season, though, with a brain fart, adoptive father, Mr. Danvers, brain fart, Dean Cain. So I'm not sure that I want to see a repeat of long lost parent comes back again.
Ooh, good point.
Dean Cain's character, whose name is escaping me.
Jeremiah
Danvers. There you go. I swear I know English people.
It's been a long day for Chris. His second podcast of the day. Yeah, as I said before, I think this is going to be the best season of Supergirl yet. So this has coming with high expectations with me, and we'll just see what it ends up with. So any last call for any news, Chris? You got any tidbits that we haven't talked about?
No, I'm good.
All right. Michelle, are you good?
I'm good too.
All right. We're going to move on into some feedback, and we did get an awesome review on the Starling Tribune in Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes. Just want to bring that up. Thank you very much to Flareverse Fan, who entitled the review fantastic. Found out about the podcast a couple of months ago. Avid Arrow watcher, and this is the first podcast I listened to. Absolutely love it. Awesome chats and great way to find news on Arrow and the Flareverse. Any fan of Arrow, subscribe and you won't be disappointed. So thank you very much, Flareverse Fan. Really appreciate that. And then for anybody else out there, if you happen to give us a review, go ahead and tip us off a little bit and we'll make sure we read it on the podcast. So Chris, not only are we an awesome podcast, but we're part of a network of awesome podcasts, aren't we?
That's right. The Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of a network of podcasts that you can find over at GonnaGeekNetwork.com. We've got 23 shows, I want to say right now, that make up the network that cover a variety of topics. Could be video gaming, could be specific TV shows, could be nerd culture in general. There's all sorts of things, but each week we try to highlight one specific episode of something on the network. Just to tease you a little bit, make you go and check it out. And this week I want to talk to you guys about episode 38 of the In Defense Of cast, entitled Merits of the Maligned. Joined once again by Kat Smith, we look into the merits and value of characters often maligned for failure to conform. And you can find that over at GonnaGeekNetwork.com, in addition to all of the other shows on the network. But speaking of the network, we've got some pretty cool things coming up, don't we, SP? Something about Gen Con?
Yes, for those of you that don't know, Gen Con is the predominant convention in the world for gaming, not only video gaming, tabletop gaming, just all sorts of gaming. And it's in Indianapolis, Indiana. It will be occurring the weekend of 17 August through the 20th of August. And Saturday morning on the 19th of August, four of us from Gonna Geek will be part of two panels about podcasting. First one's going to be at 10 a.m. in the Crown Plaza at Pennsylvania Station C. The title is, What is a Podcast? A Miserable Little Pile of Secrets. Podcasts are hot these days, but what exactly is a podcast? How do you listen? And how can you start podcasting yourself? Members of the Gunna Geek Podcast Network explain how to get in on the game. And then that's followed by the second session at 11 a.m. So they're back to back again in Crown Plaza at Pennsylvania Station C. We don't have to move rooms. And the title is Purposeful Podcasting with the Gunna Geek Network. What are you trying to do with your podcast and how can you do it best? The Gunna Geek Podcast Network veterans share their secrets, best practices, industry trends, and a Q&A for casual and pro podcasters. The panel will be made up of Cody Gaw, verified Cody Gaw of the Game Life Balance US fame and WGN fame, also now the Curiosity Podcast fame from Curiosity.com. He's joined by his co-host from Game Life Balance US, John. And guess what? Our very own Michelle will be on the panel. Michelle?
Me? Really? Me?
Yeah, you. You're going to be on the panel. What do you think about that?
Oh, my goodness. So awesome. Totally. I can't wait. We did panels for Indiana Comic Con, and that was a blast. And I'm sure with Cody and everybody, it's going to be an interesting dynamic. And if you're in Gen Con, swing by. We'd love to see you.
Absolutely. And I will be there as well. So we'll see you there at Gen Con Saturday, the 19th of August, starting at 10 a.m. in Crown Plaza, Pennsylvania, Station C.
Well, guys, I think it's time for us to start wrapping things up. So a big thank you to everyone that did participate live on Geeks.live. If you were in one of our chat rooms on one of our sites, you were in all of them because it's rebroadcast everywhere. So also a thank you to everyone who listened and viewed the show at a later date as well, because you can find it on Spreaker, YouTube, Twitch, Mixer. Hey, we're everywhere. Just go to GunnaGeek.com. You can find it.
Chris's plan to dominate the internet with his shows. And if you have stopped by or you're listening to this later, tell all your other friends they can listen to us and join us live Sundays, 3 p.m. Pacific or 6 p.m. Eastern on www.geeks.live. Don't forget, just like Faleroverse fan, to rate, review, and subscribe and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And thanks to all the production team behind the podcast, and thanks to all the fans of the show.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. That's a great episode, guys. That wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Kagi something.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Iguana Soup.
And I am at Michelle Ely signing off with hashtag Urine Barrier. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.